When I was growing up, I wish someone had told me that I wasn't alone, and that I belong in the outdoors as much as anyone else. That my love for hiking, biking, skiing, climbing, as a black little girl wasn't uncommon or abnormal. I wish that I was told to never stop seeking outdoor spaces, because one day I would find a community of strong, powerful, brilliant people of countless backgrounds, identities, and experiences who empower each other and love the outdoors just as much as I do. Believe me when I say, it's out there. You are not alone. You belong in the outdoors as much as anyone else.
See us outside. Vernos afuera.
Capnyao bên ngoài.
Voyez-nous dehors.
Nos veja lá fora.
Dingnan mo kami sa labas.
Hame bahar dekhiye.
Ging a hey chipping.
See us outside.
See Us Outside is a special 4-part She Explores miniseries made in collaboration with the Cairn Project with support from the Walton Family Foundation. I'm Gabachia Moreno, your guide in exploring the unique relationships girls and young women of color have with the outdoors, including the forces out of our control that sometimes keep us from pursuing timing nature, and the work of 4 diverse organizations creating access for us to spend more time outside. This is episode 3, Joy in Community. There's something about the embodiment of a brown body that can only be understood by those who share this lived experience. And in the shared space amongst women of color, we can find a unique comfort and freedom, knowing we don't need to explain ourselves, or we don't need to hold ourselves back, because for a change, we are understood. The 4 organizations highlighted on this series are in many ways a testament of the importance of affinity spaces. Their communities, beyond creating the opportunities for personal development, leadership, and outdoor skills, reveal the existence of a very special kind of joy.
Yeah, so my name is Cristal Cisneros, and I am a Trailblazers instructor.
Cristal is a participant turned instructor in Women's Wilderness Trailblazers program, an outdoor program led by and for women of color. She initially participated in the program because she wanted to find independence after a breakup. Previously, a lot of her outdoor experiences were in the company of her ex-boyfriend, a white man, and I was curious about whether she's noticed any fundamental differences between going outside in the company of a white man versus going out on her own or with other women of color.
Oh, yes, 100 billion percent. The biggest thing I think is just, you know, being with a white man, it was, okay, let's go anywhere and we'll camp and all of that stuff without really taking it into account. He never took into account like the very real anxieties that I had when it came to going more in rural Colorado. So I'm sure with everywhere across the United States, those a lot of rural communities are very heavily like Trump supporters. There's still a lot of like racists that live there. And so when we would go to these outdoor adventures, especially in the mountains here in Colorado, you know, and we're driving and I see 10 Trump signs, that fear was definitely there. And it wasn't respected and it wasn't understood. So compared to going with these women of color who were very, very cognizant about, is the area that we are taking the group safe? Is it somewhere where women of color can take up space? Is it a place where I feel comfortable being alone as a woman of color? So just keeping those in mind, you know, there's a big push to diversify outdoors, but people don't understand that you have to make sure that those outdoor spaces are safe. I mean, we saw a black couple who went camping and had a companion to them. So yes, we definitely want to diversify outdoors, but we have to make sure that the spaces that we are encouraging folks of color to occupy are safe. And that's probably the biggest difference that I notice, is that with people of color, there were those hesitations and there was that piece of, you know, making sure that it was safe for us, compared to being with a white male. It was just like, no, we're going to go wherever.
And did you feel safe going wherever because you were in the company of a white man, or how was that internal feeling?
Yes and no. I don't know how to explain it. I mean, I think, yes, having someone that could say, if we were in an area that was not welcoming of people of color, you know, he could pop his head out and be like, we're good. But at the same time, like, that's not a place emotionally that I want to be in, knowing that I needed someone to feel safe. So yeah, that's kind of a yes and no question. At times I did feel safe. At other times, it was just like, you're not understanding what either microaggressions or racist incidents, like what the toll it has on me personally. And so you are taking me into a space that could affect my mental health and make me associate outdoor adventures with this real negative impact on social emotional health.
I would like to acknowledge here that identity politics play many roles when it comes to feeling safe, welcome, or comfortable in different spaces. Being in white proximity has a different effect on different folks. And while for some, like for Cristal in this particular example, she had the sense that she could be okay, that doesn't necessarily remove the discomfort of accessing a predominantly white space. Also, our lived experiences will inform how safe, welcome, or comfortable we might feel in the company of others who look or don't look like us, in the company of a man versus the company of a woman, a white man versus a white woman. The topic is layered and complex. Let's turn back to my conversation with Cristal and hear about the difference it has made for her to get outside with other women of color. So you went through the Trailblazers program and then came back as a field instructor. What has that experience been like?
Amazing. I think being able to see how much power and joy it brought to myself, and being able to create a space that hopefully contributed to power and joy for other women of color, was so meaningful and so impactful. I think, you know, when you know something is life-changing, you want to be a part of that. And I think that's really why I wanted to be a part of the Trailblazers program as an instructor, because, you know, it was life-changing for me. And I just love that program so much that I'm like, I don't want to redo it. Come back and share what I learned as an instructor. And then there's also that it's nice coming from being the instructee and then going to the instructor, because you can kind of understand some of either the concerns or the joys that the participants have because you were in their situation.
Right.
So it's kind of a great balance of just having, being able to understand both sides of the coin, and the community building and the support and the uplifting of one another. I think that has been the biggest thing that I've seen. You know, when you start with a cohort, you're somewhat shy and reserved at first, and then seeing the progression of this like strong, badass community of women, girls of color, who are like cheering for one another, it's just this amazing community that has each other's backs. And I think that has been the biggest reward, is the overnight backpacking trip and, you know, participants expressing, I don't know if I can do it. And then everyone rallying around being like, yes, we can do it. Like, let's go, you know, I can carry this for you. I can carry this for you. Like, we can take a break right here, but let's keep going. So just having that community of support, I think, and watching it grow.
Why do you think it's important to create spaces for learning and building bonds in and around the ocean? that include girls of color?
Yeah, I mean, I'm a water sign, so of course I'm biased, right? Like my connection to outdoor spaces or any form of water, like that's just innate, like in me.
This is Adriana Guerrero, the assistant director of Brown Girl Surf, an organization that's building a more diverse, environmentally reverent, and joyful women's surf culture.
I think it really goes back to also, like, again, why Brown Girl Surf was founded was the idea around representation, right? Like Farhana and Mira saw that there was a lack of representation and how that can influence in you participating or just choosing to participate too, right? Like that's, I think the beauty about our programs is you try it and if you don't like it, that's cool. If you try it and you love it, that's cool too, right? I think that's the freedom and the privilege for especially young girls is to kind of opt in and to choose to be advocates for themselves, right? And empowering them in that way and say, hey, I'm going to try this and it's okay if I don't like it. At least I tried, right? It's that idea of saying that I belong here. And I have a right to just check this out, to try it and to pursue it if I don't. And so it's something that I've seen too in our programming is this like not only individual competence, but this group competence, right? Like that's also I think the joy of Brown Girl Surf in our programming is we literally, due to COVID, we literally take up space because everything has to be socially distanced on the beach. And I was reflecting with our program manager, like, it's such a statement and there's such a beauty in that. Like we occupy so much of the beach when you see us and that's like, hey, we're here and we belong here. And so that's the messaging that we also instill with our participants and our programming is you belong here. You have the right to take up space on the beach and you have the right to connect with the ocean and all she has to offer, right? Especially right now, you know, through the healing power of the ocean as well. And I think that that's really critical for girls, especially girls of color, because we don't always see ourselves in those spaces or think that we are entitled, right? Because there's a lot of that that comes with privilege for some folks in the outdoor space is that level of entitlement and understanding that nature is for everyone, right? Like she belongs to no one and the same with Mother Earth, right?
Exactly. Yeah, I was actually reading something today about, it was related to permaculture, but it was basically like criticizing how permaculture erases the indigenous origins of living in balance with nature. And one of the things that they were saying was, you know, in most indigenous languages, they don't even have a word for nature because we are part of nature and we are one with her. So it's not this thing that I think in our settler colonial mindset, we think of nature or land as this thing that can be divided and allocated to specific individuals, where in reality is we are just here with it and part of it.
Yeah, I agree.
What's powerful for girls and young women about receiving mentorship from other women that look like themselves? And this is specific for girls of color.
I think the power of representation is even to me, like at my age, I think the conversation in our country and society, for some people, it's a reawakening, it's awakening, it's a reckoning, right? And just understanding the harm that the lack of representation has had for young girls and women of color and this idea of how they need to participate in our society or should be seen and not heard. And this is what is expected from them versus that. And so to be able to be in the spaces that our community shares together, right? It's, we all share this connection of the love for ocean and for some of us for surfing and some of us it's the growing love of surfing, right? And then to be able to have those conversations and you hear that you can't really tell because everyone's wearing a wetsuit, right? And so we all look the same in like a black wetsuit, you know, with our rash guards and you don't know how old someone is or what someone does maybe in their professional career or maybe what they're studying. And so what I have seen and heard a lot and how it's been impactful and beneficial, especially for our younger girls to have someone you know, who is older, and to be able to have those like real conversations, that you remove the power dynamic and that authority that sometimes can happen in a young person, adult conversation. And they're just having a real candid conversation about what is it like to be a woman of color, like, you know, and the pressures that come with that. So it's, I wouldn't even say it's that like adult to peer, because I think I learned so much from the young people every time Marlene, my program manager, and I have, we do a program debrief and I'm like, wow, like I learned so much from so-and-so, you know, and that's the beauty of working with young people. You know, I say they keep us young at heart, but there's just so much knowledge and wisdom too that young people have to offer us. And so it's this almost like cross mentorship that I see happening. And so just knowing that, you know, these young girls that are, you know, whether they're just starting high school or starting college, you know they have an additional support system to come back to if they have a question or they want to do an interview, mock interview and things like that. You know, like we are there, an additional community for them. We're always here with open arms for them. And so I've seen that be really impactful and powerful.
This idea of communal cross mentorship, the fact that instructors learn from participants just as much as participants learn from mentors, it's something that came up again and again in my conversations. In these spaces, there's a feeling that everyone's voice is valued. Here's Alexis Krauss, co-founder of Young Women Who Crush, a program that teaches climbing to New York City youth.
I think the thing that comes back most often is just the power of mentorship and relationships and community. Our crushers are very close to one another. They're very close to their mentors. And there's just this beautiful reciprocity that exists, and the way that mentorship evolves, and the way that one year the participants will be brand new, and then the next year they'll be mentoring their peers, and then it just grows and grows and builds from there. So I think the power of community and the realization that that community is there for them is probably one of the things that our crushers talk about most. And then there's also just the joy that it brings them. There's a lot of happiness. There's a lot of spontaneous laughter.
Part of the mission of Young Women Who Crush is creating a safer space for dialogue around gender, race, sexuality, and other aspects of identity. Alexis shared that they help facilitate this environment by starting every session with an Indigenous-inspired gratitude practice and an additional quick mental health check-in just to help everyone get in the best headspace to climb.
You know, this is a space for women and gender expansive youth. And this is a space where like pronouns are super important. One of our mentors, Lou, has been incredibly influential in how we introduce ourselves. And they always reminds us the power of pronouns and the power of identity. And because our space is gendered in that it's a women's space, how can we make that space as inclusive as possible? So we have done workshops with them all about their photography and what it means to be non-binary. And so we have actual conversations about gender. We have conversations about sexuality and how, you know, we can support each other and for our students who are really going through it in high school and trying to contend with their own identity and what it means to be, you know, a young gay woman from an immigrant family that has very traditional values in a lot of ways. So we talk about religion. We talk about what it means to be a woman in, you know, and how to respect family traditions, but how to also seek education. I mean, you know, I have really intense conversations with one of our mentees, Marjana. She's been in the program now for a while, and she's a young Muslim woman, and she wears a hijab, and she's also the first woman in her family to go to college and to leave home. And so, you know, just having a lot of these conversations. And so it's like, I feel like it's super easy to kind of like approach this stuff from an academic space when you're not like I don't know, it's like, it's easy to kind of think about like, well, how are we going to have these conversations? But if you just put a bunch of young women from all over the world, right? Like from the Philippines, from Yemen, from Bangladesh, from the Dominican Republic, like if you just take all of those girls and between the ages of like 13 and 22 from all of those experiences, from all of those ethnicities and cultural backgrounds, like they're so diverse, like all of those bases are essentially going to be covered if you create the space for them to have the dialogue. And that's what we're about, is just like, how do we allow you to explore what's already there, right? Because it's all there, it's all represented. It's just a matter of like, how do we allow you to just like dig into it and just like really chew on it.
Alexis emphasizes that Young Women Who Crush is not a top-down organization. It's mentee and mentor-led. This came through in my conversation with one of their mentors, Marianne Perez. We talked about the power of girls and young women seeing their mentors, often women of color, push through fears while climbing. We also talked about how the community cultivated through the organization allows for Marianne to show up as herself and speak honestly about her beliefs.
In that community with Young Women Who Crush, seeing how like how much of an impact they leave, even for me, like it's been really hard for the past couple of years with other things that have been going on in my life, but like I couldn't freely say things like Black Lives Matter in my previous life that I had because of, you know, relationships that I had, because I didn't want to offend other people. And it was just like, no, Black Lives Matter. And like being surrounded by people that feel the same way and they're open and they are not afraid to say that. And even the mentees supporting that. And it's just like, oh, wow. Like I finally feel like I have a community that understands who I am and my beliefs, and I don't feel like I have to hold anything back because I have such a supportive team behind me, you know? And it was nice to hear that, and it was nice to see us all be together in that moment, even though we weren't. And again, like having that sense of community is so important for people that maybe haven't had safe spaces to be themselves and to be vulnerable and to support organizations or to support movements that are needed. That's what Young Women Who Crush, that's what they do. Like, that's the empowerment that this organization gives.
This empowerment, this joy to stand in your beliefs and to show up as your full self, comes through in all the organizations I talked with for this series. Affinity spaces are powerful and necessary. Could you share your name and your role at Charles Roundtree Bloom Project?
Yeah, I'm Karina Zavala, and my role at Charles Roundtree Bloom Project began as a volunteer, and I slowly got more involved as the organization grew. And right now my role is a volunteer coordinator and an advocate for youth of color.
In episode one, Our Cultural Connection, we heard from Charles Roundtree Bloom Project's founder, Kiamber Thompson. She told us how her organization is helping youth who have incarcerated family members reconnect to the outdoors. Volunteer coordinator Karina helped me understand the healing aspect of being in community with youth of color who have this family history in common. What motivated you to get involved with the Bloom Project?
So when I first heard of the Bloom Project, I was doing a service year as an AmeriCorps member in San Antonio, Texas, and Kiamber reached out to the organization City Year that I was working for, and they sent out an interest form to fill out, And I remember the first thing that caught my attention was the What We Do, which was to provide healing-centered outdoor experiences and educating the youth on the environment around them. I was going to be working with youth that have had parents that were incarcerated or relatives, and I had relatives that have been incarcerated and know the difficulty of healing. And I was just motivated to get involved and use my knowledge and energy towards this project in any way that I could.
Yeah, that must have been... How did you feel when you saw that description on it?
Yeah, I thought it was surprising to me, like, 'cause it was the first time that I had ever heard of any organization working like that or with youth. That it was just something different to me, and I was surprised, also very happy at the same time that, you know, there was someone that was going to be doing something like this. And I just wanted to be a part of it in any way that I could, because it's, you know, it's hard speaking from like a personal experience, you know, having relatives that have been incarcerated. It's difficult to heal. And I think using the outdoors, it's a great experience to center that as a healing center, you know.
Karina found the healing power of the outdoors at a young age, living and growing up in Idaho, and feels particularly motivated to share it with the youth through the Bloom Project.
Ever since I was little, I just remember going outside and playing with my dad, and I think those memories help me. Every time I go outside, I go back to those memories, right, as when I was a child, and it helps me heal, right? And it takes me to like a happy place, and those memories, I like relive them again, right? And it helps me heal from the bad things that happened. And going camping with my family too, creating those experiences with my family have been also a healing part of me.
Karina shared with me that she's seen youth enter the program timid and unsure, then grow more comfortable and confident after spending time outside with peers. All the while, the Bloom Project is striving to create a safer space outdoors for their participants. This is made possible through a community that understands what it's like to grow up with family members who have been incarcerated.
I think it's easier for people to feel comfortable and to feel safe when you hear someone else's story that has gone through the same as you or similar as you. At least I personally feel more connected, right? I'm like, yes, I feel you, you know, or like you have similar feelings, and you just feel more safe to open up and share your experience as well than with someone you don't really resonate with, right? Mm-hmm. And having this community with similar backgrounds, that's why when they do join, you know, we ask, have you had any parents or any relatives that have been incarcerated in the past or similar to that? And I think it's important that the youth feel comfortable with their mentorship. So right now we're kind of looking for that, right? Someone that has a similar background or is able to understand them from that point of view.
These spaces, created for and with joy, are a powerful force for us girls and women of color. You may have heard the terms Black joy or Brown girl joy. These are not simply referring to happiness or pleasure. Joy in this context is an act of resilience. Living as a woman of color can be exhausting. We endure systemic disadvantages, negative stereotypes, racial profiling, blunt racism, hate speech, colorism, among many other aggressions, both within and outside of our communities.
This could easily cloud our mood, our motivations, our outlook on life. Yet we show time and again that we are beyond capable of joy. I love how Oprah Winfrey defines joy. She says it's a sustained sense of well-being and peace, a connection to what matters. After having all the conversations I make of this series, I am better able to understand how nature and community are great enablers of joy, because they matter above all barriers. This was episode 3 of See Us Outside, a 4-part She Explores miniseries made in collaboration with the Cairn Project and made possible with a grant by the Walton Family Foundation. All 4 parts are available in your feed now. Learn more about the Cairn Project and their work to make outdoor experiences more accessible for girls and young women by heading to their website at cairnproject.org. You can learn more about Young Women Who Crush, Women's Wilderness, Charles Roundtree Bloom Project, and Brown Girl Surf through the links in our show notes and via the landing page at she-explores.com. Thank you to Alexis Krauss, Marianne Perez, Adriana Guerrero, Karina Zavala, and Cristal Cisneros for their time and conversation. The voice memo included in this episode was submitted by Denise Meeker. The opening See Us Outside compilation includes the voices of Marinel de Jesus, Yakuta Punavala, McGee P&D, Fernanda Jarjim, Arlene, Chi Pham, Denise Meeker, and Doreen Wong, and includes Spanish, French, Portuguese, Tagalog, Hindi, Vietnamese, Cantonese, and English. Music in this series is all by women of color via MusicBed. Featured in this episode are Joy Ike and Sita. This episode was hosted by me, Gabacha Moreno, and produced by me, Gail Straub, and Noel Russell. See Us Outside is a She Explores miniseries and a production of Ravel Media.